Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the show is about to start in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
He'll be fine on the mountain.
It's time for Inside the Gamecocks, the show. Built by the Barn Dominium Company, served by Chicken Cock Whiskey, and part of the Chief Sports Network.
Touchdown, Carolina! Touchdown, Ace Sanders!
All right, greetings and good morning. Welcome aboard and welcome home. Inside the Gamecocks, the show live from the Signorama Studios, the preferred sign partner of your South Carolina Gamecocks. Signorama, West Columbia, South Carolina. Signorama.com. Served by Chicken Cock Bourbon, always. And built by the Barn Dominium Co. The BarnDominiumCo.com. Golly, their floor plans just continue to amaze everybody. They're one of the nation's best builders. The Barn Doco is what they're called. If you're going to build a home, make it your dream home. The BarnDominiumCo.com. Schubert, Mad Dog, and myself, JB, here until 2 o'clock today. Mike Morgan in at noon. John Whittle in at 11:20. Gamecocks take 2 of 3 from the Gators in Gainesville this weekend. A full profile coming up on Carolina baseball. Plus, it's spring game week. Carolina is the last SEC team, I think, to complete their spring practice with a 7 o'clock kickoff at Williams-Brice Stadium under the lights, weather permitting. Some rain right now in the forecast, but that can all change drastically. It's going to be a warm week across the Palmetto State, as a matter of fact, and a huge weekend. Big Gamecock weekend is upon us. Not number one anymore, but Arkansas will be in town, and you can call them number one if you'd like to. They will be number two after dropping a pair at Alabama this weekend. But at the end of the day, it is still going to be a huge, huge series for South Carolina. And then the following week, the Kentucky Wildcats will be in town. They're number three in the nation, 30-5. Wow. It's just been incredible. Some commitment news. South Carolina has been reeling them in. JC can fill us in on all of that. And, of course, hats off to Scottie Scheffler for winning the Masters. Only 8 players under par this weekend, guys. Of course, played incredibly difficult. Tiger did finish last, but made the cut. And he has now played 100 rounds at that golf course, which is just crazy to even think about. With all that said, hope you all had just a magical, wonderful weekend. I've got to gloat. Got to say something. My daughter, Hannah, made the first out for the Kiss City Cafe Cardinals this weekend. So proud of her. Nobody else could figure out that, you know, when they pick the ball up and throw it to first, you get it, and you run over and touch first. And if the runner hasn't gotten there, he or she is out. Hannah figured it out. And so hats off to my daughter, Hannah, for making the first out of the year. It was a Hall of Fame moment as a father. Now I understand what all other dads have gone through when their kids play T-ball and you coach them the right way and you do things the right way. And, hey, just keep doing it the right way and it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And it finally happened. So that was the big accolade at the Bradford household this weekend. Hannah makes an out.
Nice. You got to love when the game clicks for the game slows down.
Man. Yeah. Man, I was so proud, man. I was so proud. And she, the smile on her face was just awesome. It was so cool. So there you go. Way to go, Hannah James. She rocked it. What's nice. Up, JC? Where's your heart going? Where was it?
It's National Titanic Remembrance Day. So,
it's a national day for everybody.
No, see, all right, so I'm doing these little cartoons like for the show, for the thumbnail and the social. I'm doing these little cartoons every day, and I'm going to do a different one every day. That's my goal. However many shows
I was wondering what inspired today's. Okay.
And I was like, so I look it up, and so it's all, there's always like four national days. It's also National Purple Day.
It's Tax Day.
That's Tax Day. It's National Be Yourself Day. And then one other one, like some kind of food. And I always try to pick the most obscure one that can fit into the cartoon. So on today's little show logo and thumbnail, and you can see it on Instagram, Twitter, and at the top of the show, it's kind of like our curtain that we pull back. There's the Titanic with a gigantic Gamecock on the front. Yeah. Now, let's hope that doesn't mean anything.
I was about to say, I don't know that that's a...
maybe not the best choice. You know,
what about the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria? Didn't they make it across the
Atlantic? Yeah, they actually made it. So I don't know, man. It's just I thought it was cool. And then, you know, of course, that song from the movie My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion.
Well, hats off to one of my best friends, Mike Sisko. It's National Glazed Spiral Ham Day. So all
yes, I thought about that too.
Honey baked ham in Somerville, South Carolina, and get your goodness from the former Gamecock right hander. How about that? Quick plug for him. He's the jerk that comes out and, you know, doesn't smile and
doesn't thank you.
Yeah. He's like you know, the occasional fast food worker who isn't happy to be there. They just kind of toss the food at you. Yeah, it's him. He's such a
man. The people of the Honey Baked Ham here, like, they act like they're doing you a favor when you walk into the store, and they are, because it's so delicious. I mean,
that's right.
You could be You could be like the soup Nazi with Honey Baked Ham if you wanted to be. No ham for you.
Sure.
Man, that makes a good split pea soup after a while too. If you put the
bone absolutely.
Get it out, make you some soup on it. Oh man, God,
yeah.
Anyway, I got some ham in there. I'm sorry, what I'm having for lunch? A nice ham sandwich. So
yeah, absolutely, man. I'm with you. Some Duke's mayo on top. Ooh,
nice, some fresh tomato. Roll. Yeah, that's something else. So anyway, yeah, I had a good weekend. You know, we watched the Gamecock baseball team twice, and Saturday kind of hung out with some friends, and then Sunday. Our mailbox fell down.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
It's split in half. Like, you know, I think the snowplow got it a couple months ago. So we've had our mailbox sitting in a trash can surrounded by bricks. And so I dug a hole and put concrete. So we got the new mailbox going up. So that was exciting. And we went to see the kid's grandfather. He's getting knee replacement surgery. So we hung out in the nursing home and watched the Masters and then put a mailbox in the ground. So that was my Sunday. So, yeah. Nothing too terribly exciting around Casa de Sherbert. I get on the bird tomorrow and fly to Columbia. So that's, I'll be at Studio South and on my laptop. So bear with me sound wise for the rest of the week. I don't think I can plug my mic into my laptop. So, but I'm going down. I'm going to be at the Big Spur Golf Tournament. Hope to see all of you there and all that good stuff.
Yeah. If you haven't signed up for that, head to thebigspur.com and you can. There's definitely a link on the message boards. It's pinned at the top. It's 1 week from today. It's a 9 a.m. shotgun. Nana Sports will be serving lunch. There will be a silent auction as well, and it'll be played out at Fort Jackson. It's neat. Always neat. If you've never played Fort Jackson, always neat to play at Fort Jackson, because you'll hear some folks off at the firing range from time to time, and you'll see some choppers and things like that kind of sporting around. So you're able to tip your cap to the U.S. military while you're there playing around the golf, and really looking forward to that. John Whittle's worked his rear end off, as he does with everything in his life, on putting this together once again. So excited to play in that, and hope to meet many of you out there. And hope you're playing. Again, it's on the bigspur.com. That's the website that is owned by one J.C. Schubert, whose heart will go on, according to his screen today here on Inside the Gamecocks, the show. I know we got plenty of baseball coming, and I'll try to save as much of this to have with John, a full profile in South Carolina. But anything, J.C., that you can share on the commitment front for Gamecock football? I know Coach Beamer last night let the world know that somebody else has jumped into the Garnet and Black boat. Cannot hear you.
Muted
you
there, muted. JC. Yeah, man.
I think somebody everybody's going to like. I think there was a crystal ball put in right after that. So I'm not going to reveal any state secrets, but let's just say hypothetically it is that Kendall Daniels guy from Norfolk, Virginia. Number one, I said it all the time, it's a place you need to go recruit, the 757 Tidewater, whatever. Number two, when you start to kind of look at safety down the road, okay, so you got Nick Emanuore, kind of a longer guy. Kilgore's got some length to him, even though he's not as tall. Really DQ Smith too. I mean, they're all kind of, and if you look through Torian Gray's career, he's done it with both. I mean, guys like D'Angelo Hall weren't particularly tall, but they were great. And then also guys like Jimmy Williams and Cam Chancellor in the secondary at Virginia Tech that he coached were outstanding, and they were monsters. So he's got a track record with monsters, right?
Yeah.
And you look at this class with the same, you look at Leach and the length that guy's got, and then if you get this kid, he's another 6'3", 190-pound guy that will knock your manhood in the dirt. Yeah. Physical. And now that's why I love kids at 757. They're like Miami kids, South Florida kids. They love you don't have to worry about them loving football at all, and they love the physicality of it. That's, you want to look back through Frank Beamer's career and how did he come up with all these athletes that would destroy you on defense? Even though they weren't heavily recruited, his pipeline from 757 to Blacksburg was something special. And I've always believed under Shane that South Carolina needs to get into Virginia. Virginia and Virginia Tech are not, they rarely keep guys at home. They didn't really during Frank Beamer's era either, because those schools were kind of so isolated and far away from really just about everywhere in the state. So there's a chance, you know, and they got Fred Johnson this past time and, you know, had a good shot at that receiver that stayed home. But, hey, now you got this guy, if that's the guy. And, you know, you pair him with Leach. And then they really like Kelvin Hunter that they got out of West Florence, who's a baller for this class. So, mm-hmm. You know, and when you look at recruiting, you look down the road. And as much as I gripe and complain about people griping and complaining about D-tackle recruiting, I'll have to kind of admit to you guys that y'all are right in doing that, because that's what you want to do is look – for this class down the road. Too often, like in the past, before we had great recruiting coverage, people would just look at it in terms of next year. Well, we need this next year. Well, you guys are looking 2 years down the road. So kudos to you for that, even though it annoys me sometimes. But when you look down the road at safety now, you kind of see, and then there's another kid. Gosh, his name escapes me. I had it written down, Christopher something, out of Georgia, that they're in on. And I don't know how many safeties DBs they're going to take this year, but he's another 6'3½, 6'4" kid that looks really good. So, you know, that's, if you can get those kind of guys that can play, you know, not all of those tall guys can play, but if you can get those kind of guys that can play, it's a big advantage for your secondary. I mean, look, Nick Emanuore had some unfortunate moments in coverage last year, but you saw the interception against Clemson. I think he had one against Kentucky too, didn't he? I mean, you saw the big old Paul going up there and knocking things away. That's length. That's very beneficial. Christopher Hatfield. Thanks. Yeah, I knew it was a familiar name. And Clint also mentions Jadon Blair from North Carolina. So Carolina, South Carolina could have a pretty good group of safeties in this class to go along with the kid from West Florence that they got, Kelvin Hunter, that they got from last year. So that's if it is this kid, it's a big pickup. If it's not, and I'll just leave that there, then who else could it be? You know, who knows? But I think that it's good that recruiting starting to pick up. I also think for those that were concerned, myself included, and I wasn't concerned. I was just like, well, you know, there's not a lot of momentum right now. You know, getting any kind of out-of-state blue chipper, if it is this kid, and you beat the home team, Virginia Tech, you beat Virginia, who thought they had a good shot at him, and you beat Penn State, and he also had offers from Alabama and some other schools too. So this is a guy with a legit resume from two states away after a 5-7 season. That's pretty doggone good recruiting, I would think.
Well, and JC, it's spring game week, and I mentioned this Friday, but and I know I guess we'll have Hale tomorrow, I think. But throughout the week, the Big Spur will continue to compile a list of prospects that will be in. I know there's at least 2 5-star prospects that will be on campus this weekend, but there's going to be a ton of players, both on officials and unofficials, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I would, you know, Shamari Earls, I have not seen the list to see if he'd be in, but there's a corner from Virginia that they're really, I think they lead for right now. But yeah, absolutely. There'll be, I think Zayden Walker's in, David Sanders is in for his official visit. Who knows what other top guys they will have. You know, and I think that's a positive. Anytime you get a big group in, that's good. Like I said, they didn't have the momentum to start this cycle that they did last cycle, where, you know, guys like Smith and Gregory and Pringle and, I mean, they were in Thompson, really, they were done. I mean, it was done by the time they got to January. Well, you know, now you got to do a little more sales, you know, because kids aren't as sure and there's more NIL stuff out there than ever. And, you know, you got to make sure. So I think that you got to see some light at the end of the tunnel as far as that goes. I want to say one more thing about the transfer portal, because I think it opened back up today.
Tomorrow.
There is still an SEC rule, in case you were, because I think everybody's kind of afraid, because I think Alabama's got 13 spots or so open, and they're going to be aggressive. There's still an SEC rule. You can't go from SEC school to SEC school during the second portal opening. Right. So in case you were concerned, Kalen DeBoer was going to come raid the Gamecock roster, that or Kirby Smart or whoever, because Georgia, LSU, and Bama all have spots, is my understanding, and Texas A&M as well. Don't be afraid, because the rules are going to make it tough for anybody to go SEC to SEC right now. So, of course, you know, you never know. They may get sued, but and that'll change. But that's kind of the long and short of it there. I know that in the back of just some fans I've talked to, their minds, they kind of had their eye, the ones that follow recruiting closely, kind of had their eye on Bama. Josh Pate said something about teams' rosters getting completely raided the other day. And, you know, he's kind of tight around the SEC and stuff. But there won't be any SEC on SEC violence this time around.
It is 11:19. It is Monday. We are 1 week, as I mentioned, away from the 2024 Big Spur Golf Tournament. And John Whittle is putting all that together. TheBigSpur.com to register your foursome if you would like to participate, have some fun with a bunch of Gamecocks, some really neat auction items as well. Ask John about that because he's coming up next. So we'll hit a quick timeout. ITG, we'll be right back.
Gamecock Traditions, South Carolina's elite retailer for anything Gamecock related. The best selection for basketball, baseball, football, tailgating, kids stuff, and everything else. If it's got the Gamecock logo, it's got to be at Gamecock Traditions. Most importantly, they ship it to your doorstep. Order online at GamecockTraditions.com, where there's always a sale. Gamecock Traditions, GamecockTraditions.com. a tradition unlike the others.
So he comes over to me and he says, listen to me. I don't want to hear one more word out of you about my refereeing today. You say one more word about my refereeing, then you're going to be thrown out of this game. And so I turned around to all my parents. I go, hey, parents, I'm not allowed to tell the ref how bad he is, so I'm going to need you to do that for me.
Oh.
He said, you come.
I'm a beggar who could use some help. I'm a seeker searching for myself. I'm a rolling stone just waiting on a friend. I'm a lover wishing on a star for another, with a broken heart to hold each other close till the end.
Nana's Porch, nanasporch.com. At Nana's Porch, they cater weddings, parties, and all kinds of special events. Their meals are served buffet style, and seconds, they're encouraged. Plus, they can bring their mobile food unit to bring on-site and serve your guests as a unique alternative for your catering needs. Inquire about rentals as well. nanasporch.com. Find them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. 336-259-7550.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tony Pope State Farm is your go-to agent anywhere in South Carolina, North Carolina, or Georgia for the service you deserve at the price you want. So try combining your home, life, auto, and or small business insurance today. Tony Pope State Farm has been in business for more than 30 years and can handle anything you need in the tri-state area. 843-851-2222 or visit TonyPope.com today. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we welcome you to Founders Park. It's time for baseball, folks. That ball ran to right and deep and gone. Swinging a drive. Left field, way back and gone. Lifts the ball into the air the opposite way. Has he done it twice? Yes, he has.
Turn out, get to left. Taylor to the wall. It's gone. Back-to-back home runs for South Carolina.
There's a high drive. That ball is tagged. That ball is way out of here. A grand slam home run for Ethan Pepe. What else can this young man do, Derek? My goodness, that ball was killed.
This is Ethan Petrie from Gamecock Baseball. You are now listening to Inside the Gamecocks, the show. Be loud. Go Gamecocks.
Presented by Resto Pros of the Midlands. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com.
Mm-hmm. Be loud, Ethan Petrie asks. And that environment that you just saw from the balls that he hit out against LSU last year shouldn't be anything less with the second-ranked Arkansas Razorbacks coming to town on Friday at Founders Park this weekend. Gamecocks have a opportunity, another one at home, to make a big, big, big stamp in the SEC. Isn't that right, John Whittle? They went on the road to Gainesville this weekend and took two of three from the Gators, who you could tell yesterday they've got talent. They've just been struggling this weekend. Maybe that win will get them going. I don't know. But South Carolina's right in the thick of it. And these next two weekends, I mean, if you are a fan of Carolina baseball, honestly, what else do you want? You got two of the best three teams in the country walking into your ballpark the next 2 weekends. So this is what it's all about. April, May, this time of the year, when you get to play these type of games in big-time environments, and it shouldn't be anything less than exceptional starting Friday night at Founders Park.
Yeah, absolutely. And big weekend this weekend, obviously, with the spring game happening. So fans should be in town and around. Florida, this past weekend, they had their spring game, and they had their second highest attended baseball weekend in program history this past weekend. So, you know, they showed that, you know, when you're in town for the spring game, you can come around and hang around for a little baseball too. You know, South Carolina's playing better here as of late, and taking advantage of some opportunities. So get out there and see a couple of top 15 teams in the country out there playing, top 20 teams anyway.
Yeah. Second, you mentioned the second most fans in a weekend ever at Florida. The first most was last time South Carolina came to town, last year in the Super Regional. So the Gamecocks have brought the folks out, and Gainesville would be nice to bring their own fans out this weekend. So I stepped over the line this morning, John. I was doing a bunch of research, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to put all this stuff on the Big Spur. So that's your space, and I apologize for doing that. But I kind of put together a profile for people to look at to kind of understand, like, no matter what you read on Twitter sometimes, or the random dude in the message boards that wants to fire everybody and burn the whole thing down, actually, Carolina's in a pretty good spot. And, you know, if the season ended today, John, based on if you go back to the April 3rd D1 baseball postseason projections and you fast forward, you'd have to imagine Carolina would probably be a top 16, maybe 14 to 16, somewhere in there. If not, they're definitely knocking on the door. Florida's played their way out of that conversation, and some other teams around the country have. Kentucky's moved up. Vandy's kind of hanging around. But, you know, like you said, look, they've got things they still have to keep working through. We'll get to some of the individuals here in just a moment. But at the end of the day, they're still right here. They've got an RPI of 15. They're 8-7 in the league. They're 25-11 overall. They've got a hell of a resume, much like they did last year, and they're trying to put their foot down on the gas pedal and be one of the top 16 teams in the country so they can play at home.
Yeah, absolutely, and I've said a few times here lately that the eyeball test and the actual resume just haven't been very comparable for South Carolina up to this point. Now, the eyeball is starting to catch up to the resume. It's starting to look a little bit better, at least offensively. You know, I think there are a few question marks from a pitching standpoint that have cropped up here lately. But, you know, it, even when South Carolina wasn't playing great ball, they've never played themselves out of it. And, you know, they've kept themselves in position and, you know, winning games like North Carolina and being able to salvage a game in a series loss has been, you know, very beneficial for, you know, keeping themselves in that conversation. Like LSU is out of things right now because, you know, they can't hold on to a lead against Tennessee and they get swept and, you know, things like that. So, you know, South Carolina's kept itself in position the entire way. And, you know, now you have 5 weekends left. 3 of them are at home. You've got a couple of opportunities, a couple of better opportunities to win some series. And, you know, now's the time to really start playing your best baseball.
All right, here are some of those numbers, by the way. Carolina has 9 quad one victories this year. That's the third most in college baseball. Their strength of schedule is 14th. They're 2-4 versus the RPI top 10, and they're 6-6 versus the RPI top 25. You've got a road / neutral record of 7-7, and their road series record as 1-2. All of those are quad one series away from Founders Park. Just 4 SEC teams have played a more difficult schedule thus far than South Carolina. Auburn, who's not in the postseason. Ole Miss, who, if things go right, they could be on the bubble. They've got some nice series wins. They just haven't been consistent. The Gators, who, believe it or not, at 18-17 today would still be in. And Alabama, who's certainly in and fighting to host. You got quad one opportunities left against Arkansas at home, Kentucky at home, Georgia at home. That's it. RPI 11 are the dogs. And then, they got to go to Tennessee to wrap up the season. They go to Missouri. It's a quad two chance. East Tennessee and at Winthrop, quad three. And then tomorrow night, down here in the low country, they've got the Citadel. That's a quad four. Dogs have, when I say had injury issues, whew, wow, have they had injury issues. It is wild what they've been through. You know, it's all there in front of them. And then you've got with these next two series at home, if you win both of those, John, I mean, it goes without saying South Carolina is one of the teams everybody will be talking about. All right. On that team, let's start with the good. Let's go to the offense. Still had some issues with runners on base this weekend, as we saw. They had a couple big knocks late in the game yesterday, a little bit too little, too late. Dalton Reeves. I mean, so we could talk about the home runs, and that's fine because they matter, and the doubles, and that's fine because they matter, John. I don't think he struck out this weekend. It's the quality of at bat that this kid is giving this team. He's seeing pitches. He's fighting pitches. He's hit some sac flies. He's gotten bunts down. Whatever they ask him to do, he's doing it. What have you seen from him, and what have you learned about what took him so long to get into the –
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you nailed it. That's the thing with Dalton is every time he's been in there, like he has a general idea of what needs to be done. He has a great feel for what's going on in the game and how he needs to approach an at bat. And you know, that's something that a lot of these guys in the lineup have not had for a lot of this season. Dalton just has an approach up there. With the situation at hand, he knows how to adjust from at bat to at bat and in at bat. So, I mean, I really love what he's doing, and I thought he should have been in there each day for as a starter. You know, I think that's certainly going to be the case going forward. And I mean, it's just something that he's just gotten progressively better as time has gone along. I mean, he was okay in the fall. He was okay in the spring, and you know, he was never really a threat, you know, defensively to really try to steal some innings. But, you know, offensively, he's been certainly really good. They had some guys coming into the season who they thought were going to be really good and better than him. And so he's just been behind some guys and had to work his way through. And, you know, sometimes you get an opportunity and take advantage of it. And, you know, that's what he's done. And, you know, maybe it's a little bit later in the year than like Ethan Petrie's last year or Kennedy Jones's earlier this year. But, you know, he's gotten his chance and he's making the most of it. And he's not going to be coming out of lineup for a little while.
Yeah, well, he didn't catch because there's an All-American back there who leads the country in runs saved. His name is Cole Messina. And when he got moved to the leadoff spot on Friday, I kind of smiled. I sent Coach Lake a text. I said, really? They're going to lead off Messina. All right. It worked. He had his best weekend by far. I know he was 6 of 13 at the plate, but John, the walks, the amount of pitches that he would see in at bats. I mean, he was having quality, real at bats that we've expected Cole Messina to have really since day one this year. That's what I saw on TV, at least. What did you see sitting above him down in Gainesville?
Yeah, I mean, I had a big piece on Wednesday kind of looking at things offensively. And, you know, one thing Monty Lee talked about when he got here is a hitter profile. You're either a buffalo or a deer. And obviously a buffalo is a big old dude who's gonna try to put a hurting on the baseball and be big and strong. And a deer is going to be a guy who's going to, you know, manipulate the bat and use his speed and you know, hit some line drives and that kind of deal. And, you know, the reason I bring that up is I wrote in there, you know, I don't know what Cole Messina is. He's either a big old buck or a deer who can dodge a lion or something like that. I don't remember what it was, but he's a great mix of power and speed. And athleticism. And I think that Cole fits fine in that leadoff role because he can do a lot of things really well. And, you know, he's going into the weekend, him and Talmadge LaCroix were down there, you know, kind of battling for least production with runners in scoring position. So, you know, I think Cole's been feeling a lot of pressure from that standpoint. So what do? You take that, you take him out of one of those RBI spots and put him into a place where he can be a little bit more successful and maybe a little bit more free and clear his head a little bit. And, you know, a lot of times that's moving a guy down in the order, right? Like, you're taking pressure off a guy by putting him down at seven in the lineup. Well, you're not doing that with Cole Messina. His profile is good enough to where he can go into the leadoff spot and be successful. And, you know, he's a guy who will steal a base for you. You know, he can do a lot well. So I think that that move certainly ended up paying off. It was certainly atypical, but if you think a little bit, dive a little bit below the surface, it makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I remember a long time ago talking with my good buddy Drew Meyer about this when he got to South Carolina, and he was really scuffling. Coach Tanner moved him up into the top of the lineup, and he was like, "Coach, I don't have a hit in my career here." Like, he literally hadn't had a hit yet in a Gamecock uniform. Two different situations. I get it, John. But I'm talking about the feel of a head coach and knowing when and where to move a guy to kind of get him going. Well, they move Drew to the top of the lineup. They come to Charleston to play the Citadel, and like the third pitch he sees, he hits it halfway up the light pole in right field. And from there, he was an All-American, was born. And you really hope that kind of gets Cole going, and that you can wrap it around to get back to him. And we saw some life from the end of the lineup this weekend. I know that Reeves, I think he had eight, and then he hit six. But the guy that hits at the end is Will Tippett. And I'm not so sure anybody in this league was struggling worse than Will Tippett was. And he found some lightning in a bottle and able to get a couple of balls deep to right. One of them left the yard. I know he had high strikeout numbers once again this weekend, but still, he had hits. It's got to be incredible for his confidence. I know you know him, you know, personally too, just from being around and talking to him, interviewing him and those things. That is a huge boost to a guy who's been your staple at shortstop.
Yeah. And, you know, he's not coming out of shortstop. He's not coming out of the lineup this year. So, you know, folks are going to have to just start pulling for him. So, you know, yep. It's certainly a big deal for his confidence to see the ball go through the hoop, so to speak, a few times. And he did put the ball in play, and he struck out against guys who strike out guys. Like, he wasn't striking out guys. He wasn't going out there and swinging through 88 mile an hour fastballs. Like, he was competitive against Caglione before going down on a changeup, I think it was, from him. But he was fouling off 98 mile an hour fastballs. You know, that first time through, I mean, he was more competitive this weekend, you know, I think part of it is, you know, narrowing his focus and going at it just as a right-handed hitter instead of a switch hitter. You know, he swung and missed more from the left side than he does from the right side. So, you know, I think that's going to be helpful for him going forward. But, you know, Florida, is as much as their pitching staff has struggled, when you look at their overall numbers, they've been decent in SEC play. They've been mid-pack in the SEC in terms of pitching numbers, but, you know, they strike out some dudes, you know, that's gonna. I wasn't disappointed in strikeout numbers on the weekend. You know, Florida strikes out guys, and I thought South Carolina struck out at about the rate that they should.
Yeah, as far as the pitchers go pertaining to strikeouts, we'll start yesterday and work our way back. Early in that first inning, I had a feeling it was going to be maybe a little bit of rough waters for Matthew Becker, because he wasn't getting a low strike. He wasn't getting the ball low in the zone, John. And it's hard for him to be what he's capable of being if he's not getting that pitch. Did you see the same thing? Or that's at least what it looked like.
That's what it looked like, and it is more difficult for Matthew when he's not getting that low pitch. I mean, he's not a guy who can beat you with a high fastball. You know, he's an 88, 90 mile an hour, occasional 91 mile an hour fastball guy, but he's got to get that low strike for him to be most successful, and he just wasn't. So, you know, he had a couple of good pitches hit. He made a couple of bad pitches. You know, I mean, Matthew's been great all year. And as Kingston said after the game Sunday, like, Matthew has gotten hit sometimes over the course of his career and bounced back pretty well the next time out. So, you know, I think you continue with him in the starting rotation as your Sunday guy and see how things go, you know, next weekend. He was really good against a really good offensive lineup, you know, against Texas A&M. And, you know, I think he can certainly do that again this coming weekend against Arkansas.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that. I'm a fan of having guys who've pitched a bunch in their college careers, if you can get them in there in the weekend rotation. Ty Good, same thing. I mean, you wouldn't call his start an elite start on Saturday, but it was a good start. I mean, I thought both these guys actually had good stuff, John. I mean, so if you've got Eli and you know basically what you're going to get out of Eli every Friday, and then you go to a fifth-year guy, and then you go to Becker's been here. Is that 3 years or 4 years? 3 years, three. Right? Three. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go from Eli to a fifth-year guy to a third-year guy. I mean, it gives you some maturity on the mound in this league, and you've seen them pitch enough to know when it's time to maybe make a change. I guess the key is filling their spot in the bullpen. So how do you think that will shake out?
Yeah, I mean, I like Ty better out of the bullpen, to be honest with you. Okay. But we'll see what kind of decision they make there. I mean, I don't think that he was necessarily bad, you know, in the start this past weekend. And, you know, maybe you do give him another shot. But, you know, I like him better as a best as a, you know, three inning guy out of the bullpen. I mean, there's some question marks in the bullpen right now. You know, you've last few times out, Garrett Gainey's gotten barreled up a little bit. You know, Chris Veach, you know, he's been great the first time he's pitched on a weekend and not quite as good the second time around. You know, you've got some question marks right there in my mind. And you know, you're also weakening what your bullpen looked like earlier on by you know, putting Good and Becker in that starting rotation. So, you know, they're still trying to fit the pieces of the puzzle together a little bit. You know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you would much rather have your starting rotation set and know who your guys are and whatnot. But there's a lot of folks out there who are still trying to figure some things out. So, you know, Florida's had a weekend rotation that's been a little bit of a revolving door, except for Caglione on Sundays. So, you know, it's they're still trying to work it out and get the right guys in the right spots. And, you know, maybe they're getting a little bit closer, but they've tried, you know, several different combinations, and now they got to figure out what's best for innings 1 through 9 on 3 different days.
John Whittle with the Big Spur. Our coverage of Gamecock baseball proudly presented by Resto Pros of the Midlands, who also is the title sponsor for next Monday's golf tournament at Fort Jackson. More on that in a moment. How about Roman Kimble? He's throwing more strikes, seems to equate on the mound.
Yeah. I mean, Roman's looked better. He's looked good over 2 or 3 innings. Maybe not so much into that fourth, late in the third and fourth. But I wouldn't mind seeing him getting another crack in the rotation at some point. I think at the end of the day, you know, he's probably a good option as one of your starting pitchers. So I guess we'll see how that plays out, but it's been really encouraging his last few performances. So we'll see where they end up going from here, but he is throwing more strikes. He's working ahead a little bit more. That's been a big issue for him, obviously, here when he was struggling.
On a broader scale here, John, 11 teams in the SEC. I apologize for my camera. I'll get it fixed here in just a second. You can hear me okay, right?
Oh, yeah.
11 teams in the SEC. 11 teams in the SEC. Let me say this for a third time. 11 have ERAs, team-wide ERAs, well over 5. In league play, well over 5. That is wild. What is that telling you?
Well, it tells me that we're in an offensive era of baseball. You know, you've got umpires who are calling really tight zones and making pitchers go right at you, go right in there and put the ball, you know, right over the heart of the plate if they're wanting strikes called. And that's a big deal. But, you know, while pitchers are having some of their best velocity and you're figuring out a lot more things as far as, you know, spin rates and so forth, like, and where guys can hit, and you have better scouting reports than you ever have on hitters, you know, having to throw the ball in the zone, like they're having to right now is making things a little bit easier in some ways from an offensive standpoint. So, and you have so much video and scouting reports on pitchers now too, that you've got a great feel before you step into the batter's box, you know, what you're going to be seeing. So, You know, it's a good time right now to be a hitter, it seems like, because there are very few elite pitching squads really anywhere. We're going to have to, you know, maybe change a little bit of expectations on what ERA should look like and how pitchers should be perceived from a numbers standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. I think the strike zone sucks. I'm just going to be honest with you. I think it sucks. I'm so tired of it. I cannot figure out why college baseball has decided that they want to call more balls. Like, I can't figure that out. Does anybody have an answer to this? Because, I mean, we talk to Chad every week. We talk to Stewart every week. We've talked to Mark about this. I've talked to Monty about this. You've heard other coaches from all across the country, Dave Van Horn and everybody else, say the same thing. Like, why are we so anxious to call so many balls? I just don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, that's the answer. Is the strike zone is supposed to be the strike zone, and if you're calling pitches out of the strike zone as an umpire, you're not going to be graded highly, and if you're not graded highly, you're not going to be getting the priority assignments and the postseason assignments. So,
yep.
That's why the zone is what it is. Now, I don't know what the answer is in terms of fixing it. I mean, I'd like for the strike zone to be the strike zone. I mean, if we go to robo umps or whatever it's called, I mean, they're going to call a tight zone too, unless you expand what the strike zone is supposed to be in terms of pitches off the plate or pitches up or down. If you expand it that way, I mean, I don't know what the right answer is in terms of fixing that problem.
I mean, I what was the problem before? I guess I'm confused as to what was so wrong before TrackMan got involved. Was baseball broken? Because I don't think it was.
No, I mean, I'm not saying that.
I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about you. Yeah.
You get different umpires with different zones and fans and players and coaches and everybody clamor for consistency and that's hard to achieve with a moving strike zone. So then you start calling the strike zone, and it tightens. So, you know, there's not a little bit of grace when you get, you know, a half a ball or a ball off the plate. You know, you're not getting that call anymore. And, you know, that's just part of what happens, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, well, and when you do get that call now, it's magnified because right. They call everything so tightly, John. And when a pitcher gets a pitcher's pitch, Cole Messina does a great job, you know, framing up a ball that's basically, you know, threaded the needle. Essentially, what I'm getting at is when I say painting the black, like you're probably getting a half inch to an inch off the plate from, say, a guy like Matthew Becker who needs the low strike call. It, all of a sudden, everybody complains about it. That's been a strike for 100 years, and right. All of a sudden, a computer tells me it's not. Like I think they need to throw this crap out. Is what like part of the game of baseball is identifying and establishing the strike zone. That is established by the umpire. Like you, the umpire establishes a zone. You pitch to that zone. Some days it might give you an inch or two. Some days it might not give you much. I don't know, but I don't know. Like I don't like robots. I think it's ridiculous. I don't ever want to see the game go to that, but I'm not so sure why we need to treat umpires like robots either. I just think it's bad for the game.
Well, and you know, Ethan Petry struck out looking on a pitch in a big situation yesterday on a pitch that was, you know, probably is a ball, and you know that would be a call that and it was called a strike. That would be a strike under, you know, most for in the olden days before this TrackMan in tight mm-hmm. zone. But you know, he took it because it was out of the zone and it was really close, but it should have been ball four and he should have walked and that rally should have kept going. But you know, it's I don't know. It's just a different game than what it was.
I think we talked to Grayson last week. Grayson had a really good idea. He said, you know, if you're going to keep doing this, do what they've done in pro ball. I think it's two or three. You get two or three challenges a game. If you win it, you get to keep it. So on that particular pitch, Petry could have pointed to the dugout. King points upstairs. They look at it. That's a ball. Okay, that's ball four. If it's a strike, he's out of there. They've lost their challenge. maybe that's something. And pitchers can do the same thing. They call it, like, there were two pitches in the first inning yesterday that were strikes that Becker threw. They were strikes, and they were called balls. I mean, how much could that have changed? Maybe it could have even changed the umpire if they review it and they go, oh, that's actually a strike according to TrackMan. Okay, well, maybe I need to start giving that strike. I mean, how much that would help Matthew Becker? I don't know, man. I don't know. I think it sucks, to be honest with you. And I'm not just talking about from a South Carolina. I mean, I watch probably 10 college baseball games a week, if not more than that. It's happening everywhere, and it's just embarrassing. So, I don't know. I don't know. All right, well, we'll move on from that. Sorry to get all hot and bothered, but umpiring has gotten under my skin, John. as you can probably tell. You got the Citadel coming up.
It is just asinine, though, and it will drive you insane. I mean, it really does. And I'm glad you brought the Petri situation up, John, because I was thinking the exact same thing. I was like, you just – because it was back-to-back pitches basically in the same spot, if I recall correctly, one being a ball and the other being called a strike. And he wasn't the only one to have that misfortune fall upon them yesterday. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's just – I don't know. You used to be able to grade people on their consistency. That was what made an umpire an umpire. His zone was his zone, and so long as he called it the same for both teams, we're all good. But now, it's just ridiculous.
I just don't know what
You're going to have to get rid of the grading system to make it better,
or at least adjust it. Yeah. I mean, like, what was wrong with the game? Nobody can answer the question.
Right.
Well, I tell you what was wrong with the game 12, 13 years ago, John. You were covering it. Remember when they deadened the bats and you'd hit a ball that should go 420 feet and it was going 350? Like, that was screwing the game up. I don't know where umpire – I mean, yeah, if you've got a guy who's just consistently missing calls because he is, like, that inconsistent, you know what I mean? Like, a guy – this zone here, this inning, the next inning, it's up here. If you've got a guy who's consistently giving 2-3 inches off the plate, I don't care about that. So what? So I don't know. Citadel tomorrow night, John. That's the only quad four game left for South Carolina. Dogs have had, oh gosh. I mean, I just feel for them. They've had so many, they've had backup position players all over the place filling in. So really important, but it would be good for the Lowcountry Gamecocks to be able to get out, watch their team play. And then Arkansas coming this weekend, you've already mentioned Arkansas staff is elite. It's the best pitching staff in the country. So they're going to have their hands full next weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, big game tomorrow night. You know, South Carolina is going to have to find a new midweek starter this week. I'm not sure who they're going to go with. It feels like a Parker Marlott game to me. To start it out, but you know, it's going to be certainly a bullpen day with a bunch of different guys throwing an inning or two out there. So, you know, Eddie Copper is obviously done for the year, and you know, we'll see how these last three midweeks are approached, but you know, got to keep as many arms as you can ready to go this weekend for the Razorbacks and, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, which is good. So not playing on a quick turnaround or anything like that. And, you know, South Carolina should be ready to rock this weekend against one of the best pitching staffs in the country. And, you know, Arkansas is okay from an offensive standpoint, but, you know, they haven't been, you know, necessarily an elite offensive team, you know, especially in SEC games. They're kind of down towards the bottom of the pack in a lot, but in SEC games, they're the only team that has better than a 3 ERA. So that tells you a lot about who they are and what they do well.
Absolutely. Arkansas, the 2.96 ERA in league play, but just 2.38 at the plate in league play as well to offset it, as you just pointed out. Also, I want to give a big hat tip to Gamecock baseball from this standpoint. They are second in the league in fielding percentage in league play. They've only committed 9 errors. That's just one shy of Kentucky and Mississippi State, who have committed only 8 errors in SEC play this season. So the defense, well, there's a couple of plays. They had some quirky ones yesterday. That ball off the bat of Caglione that kind of squirted away up there third. You know, they had some strange stuff happen. But overall, they've been pretty clean out there. Yeah.
And I'll say this, that ball off of Caglione's bat, you know, I've been maybe a little bit too hard or maybe not. I've been a little bit hard on Talmadge LaCroix for some defensive plays this year. There was Scott Rowland's not making that play off.
No.
I had the TV stream up there as well. So I was hoping that they would show a replay that could show that. And I didn't see them show a replay that showed just how hard it bounced, but I was up the first baseline a little bit. So I was looking straight down the pipe and, you know, Talmadge had to come this way a little bit to cut the ball off. And then the ball just darted 4 to 5 feet to the right when it hit the grass. Like there was nobody making that play except for maybe Inspector Gadget. That was way too difficult or way too odd. So anyway, go ahead.
No, you're exactly right. It was very strange the way that it kind of did what it did, but overall defensively they've actually been pretty good. So hopefully that continues this week. They are, by the way, now number 20 in the D1 baseball poll. John, quick update. You had some news over the weekend pertaining to basketball. It was a little earth shattering for those that follow recruiting for Lamont Paris's team. And then give us a plug for the Big Spur Golf Tournament, which is now less than 1 week away.
Well, you know, there was some news reported over the weekend. Jamie Shaw on 3 put out there that, you know, Cam Scott's out of his NLI from Texas, and he doesn't quite have his full release yet. That maybe that comes today. But I would just urge a little bit of patience, not a ton of patience, just a little bit of patience on that situation right now. You know, if Cam, you know, does get his full release, then I anticipate South Carolina being involved. You know, with where things are right now in terms of, you know, timing on everything, like I don't anticipate this being a particularly lengthy recruiting process for Cam. You know, assuming he does get that full release, and which may come at some point today. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But I don't think you're going to have to wait a whole heck of a long time for news on how that situation is going to play out. A little bit of patience, not a ton of patience, but a little bit of patience is what I would say with the Cam Scott situation.
And then patience off the tee next Monday morning.
Yeah, Monday, 9 o'clock. You know, Big Spur Golf Tournament out at Fort Jackson. We have a handful, six, you know, groups left, spots left for that many groups. Going to be a great time out there. $100 per player. Chris Payne from Nana's Porch is catering. He's going to be out there Sunday. He's going to get out there Sunday and start smoking a pig. Going to have barbecue and all the fixings out there. We're going to have a raffle and silent auction. The folks from Vista Art are going to be out there with their prints and so forth. They have a new women's basketball championship print that'll be on sale. We have some great raffle items. Tailgating from Nana's Porch for a group of eight for football season will be a highlight. Autographed game-worn glove from Whit Merrifield, GG Jackson rookie card that's autographed. We've got a round at Bulls Bay golf course out there that we'll have up. There's a ton of great stuff. It's a charity golf tournament. We're not putting money into my pocket or JC's pocket. This is a charity golf tournament for, is going to support a couple of different organizations. One being Original Design, which, Jay Urich started, former South Carolina quarterback and wide receiver. And another is a on campus student athlete run charity called Dream on 3. So it is certainly going to be a great day out there at the course. 9 o'clock shotgun start. If you want to just come to lunch, you know, you can just come for lunch. But you can go to thebigspur.com. There's a message pinned right at the top. I'm going to tweet something out here in just a few minutes with a link to sign up. And, you know, please come out and do it. And you mentioned Resto Pros, Jeff Sturgis and his group. They're incredible. They're the title sponsor of this. And, you know, huge thanks to Jeff and his team over there. They do a wonderful job with their work and are great supporters of I know this show, but also of you know what we're doing. So really appreciate him and being the title sponsor, Jeff Sturgis, Vesto Pros of the Midlands,
and proud supporters of Gamecock Baseball as well. I can't thank them enough, as you pointed out, John. The music is on. We got to go, but great stuff as always. Hey, dude, I guess you're coming here tomorrow night, but after that, guess what? You're in town for a couple weeks. You don't have to go anywhere.
Well, headed from Charleston down to Jacksonville for a couple of days. Go see Jonah Bride play a little ball down for the Jumbo Shrimp. And then, which I might have to come back with a Jumbo Shrimp hat. You know, I got the stock sports hat on today, so maybe I'll come back next week with a Jacksonville
Shrimp hat. It's one of the
great. If they have a Jumbo Shrimp visor, please pick me one up and I'll pay you back.
I can get that done for you.
I'll see you this week, dude. So, yeah.
Please. Look forward to seeing you.
Don't cut my big head. So, visors. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing you next weekend. It's my kids on Sunday. We're taking the kids to the spring game, but their first Gamecock baseball game on Sunday. So, looking forward to trying to shield their eyes before they see the playground when we come in.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys having me. Y'all have a great week. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, John. Great stuff. TheBigSpur.com. John is the best of the best. That's where you can sign up to play in next week's golf tournament. All right. It is noon. Mike Morgan up next here on Inside the Gamecocks, the show.
Down here in the South, we don't always see eye to eye. While our taste in college football teams, or what sauce, if any, goes best on a rack of ribs, or what to mix with our Dixie vodka might be up for debate, we can all agree there's nothing better than a Southern tailgate. And like our favorite college teams, our ingredients come from small towns and big cities. They're grown in Southern soil, are crafted by Southern hands, and proudly represent the South in our backyard and beyond. So raise a glass of Dixie Southern Vodka to celebrate being made in America and raised in the South.
The season rolls on at Love Chevy, where the inventory is overflowing and the deals are in full bloom. Rev up your season with Love's exclusive specials on Suburbans, Tahoes, Silverados, Trailblazers, and the ever-popular Chevy Trax. They're hard to find. At Love Chevy, get behind the wheel and feel the possibilities. New adventures, new destinations, just you and the open road. Act now for Springtacular Savings at Love Chevrolet, the best selection of new Chevys, the lowest price, guaranteed. The other dealers upsell, overcharge, and will say most anything to get the sale. At Love Chevy, satisfied customers say it all. Things like helpful, knowledgeable, honest, and fun. Your trusted hometown Chevy dealer since 1961. I-26 at Harbison and at lovechevy.com. Together, let's drive. That's the power of love.
Love Chevy. Hey, Gamecock fans. This is Roman Kimball with South Carolina Baseball. My friends over at Electric Bikes of Charleston have the largest selection of e-bikes in South Carolina. You can cruise up to high speeds of 28 miles per hour, which is about 70 miles an hour slower than my fastball. Stay in shape and enjoy your life with an electric bike from Electric Bikes of Charleston, where buyers come from all across South Carolina. Visit electricbikescharleston.com. See you at the ballpark, and go Gamecocks.
Hey, Gamecock Nation. My name is Kyle, longtime listener of the show and avid golfer. I wanted to take my game to the next level, but let's face it, golf is a hard game to learn on your own. I heard the ad from McKellar Enterprises and reached out to the owner and former Gamecock golfer, Meredith Taylor. In just 2 months of working with Meredith, I shot my lowest round ever, and I've never felt more confident in my golf game. So if you're looking to take your game to the next level, go to McKellarEnterprises.org and book your lesson today with former Gamecock golfer, Meredith Taylor. Go Gamecocks!